The Gary Knoll Show, daily at noon on the Progressive Radio Network.
Live from New York City, it's The Gary Knoll Show. And now, your host, Gary Knoll.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll, broadcasting live from our studios in New York City. Streaming over the video as well. If you'd like to watch today's program, go to ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com or GaryKnoll.com. We have a packed hour today. My guest in the second part of our program will be Professor Ellen Hodgkins Brown. We're going to talk about why, if you know anyone who has been caught up in the home foreclosure, don't turn over your home. We're going to look at the whole idea of foreclosure gate, the crimes being committed in broad daylight with the full support of our current Attorney General and White House and Congress. And we should not accept this. They're breaking the law. So we'll tell you what you can do. Then we're going to look at a new theory of money and why we're not a prosperous nation. Yesterday, following my program, I did a two-hour filmed interview upstairs with Professor Scheer. Now, Professor Scheer had been on my program the day before. Last night, he lectured at Lincoln Center. I went down and was the back of the group. It was a nice group. He had a lot to say. Virtually everything he was talking about, we had already filmed earlier in the day for two films, one on poverty and one on Wall Street. What was of interest is that I asked him a question. I said, how can the people in the media continue to say that we're a very prosperous nation when the majority of our asset is based upon a bubble and the bubble is based upon debt? How can you make debt an asset? So we're going to explore that today, how we've been living for the last 20 years under the illusion of our prosperity, when in point of fact, we are bankrupt, completely, totally, irreversibly bankrupt. And why we can't be honest about this, and why the Fed, a completely corrupt organization, totally corrupt, vile, should be repealed. They should absolutely close down the building and take every current and former Fed person and bring them up on trial, crimes against humanity, because they have stolen the public currency in broad daylight. Alan Greenspan, Ben Bernanke, all of these people. We're going to talk with Ellen Brown about that. And I'm going to raise a question to Ellen Brown. What if we had allowed all the banks to fail on Wall Street? All of them. I'm going to posit at this moment we would be better off today. And I'm going to ask her, based upon my review of the literature and understanding of basic economics, why that is not correct or is correct. This will be an interesting discussion. The latest on health and healing, absolutely, and a special comment to the left and the Democrats who have been bashing the Tea Party. A special message to the Tea Party, both those who are not aligned to the right or left, who are simply independent and angry, and those who have aligned to the candidates and some of the buffoonery that's going on. A special comment on the accuracy of the Constitution compared to what Glenn Beck and others would like us to believe the Constitution, which say if they had written it. Well, they didn't write the Constitution, and clearly they are not reading the Constitution in its proper context. I will, and I'll show you what it actually says and why we should be very concerned about the Tea Party, the right, and the left. They are all going against the actual Constitution. Let us begin with the latest on health and healing. Michael Douglas has what is probably a irreversible state of decline at this moment. Like more than a half million people each year, he chose orthodox cancer treatment for his throat cancer. Well, you've seen his decline after receiving all of the chemotherapy and radiation. And now there's reports he only has a short period of time to live. Whether or not that's true or not, we don't know, and I certainly hope it's not true. If anyone knows him or his wife, let them know that there are people, my brother included, who've had the same type of cancer, who were able to reverse it using the best of alternative therapy. He is probably not aware that this exists. He's probably not aware that there are board-certified oncologists who are able to take end-stage cancer, whether it's a glioblastoma or astrocytoma or otsel cancer or melanoma, and by applying the principles that are not used, not even understood in orthodox medicine, have been able to help these people. I sent Patrick Swayze 5 cases of end-stage pancreatic cancer that were reversed and cured. And he had a chance to speak with the people and their physician. He chose not to. That's unfortunate. We also sent Sarah Fawcett the names and information and physicians of end-stage cancer similar to her own. Again, she chose not to use it. So if Michael Douglas wants to know about another approach, let him get a hold of my office in New York. We'll be happy to supply him with the information. This is not faith healing. This is not any form of pseudoscience. This is real. And if he would like to see just a couple of examples of people who had what was considered irreversible conditions, any of you can go up on my website. We have a banner that says miracles can happen, and look at each and every one of the people. We have over 1,600 more we will be putting up in the next 6 months. We just don't have enough staff and time to have someone dedicated to doing it. My editing staff is working. We worked last night till 11 o'clock on just finishing the latest film, which today is actually finished. We're sending off on a deadline to a film festival today. But we just don't have the staff to do it. We've filmed 1,600 people who have had miracle changes in their lives. Two of them with terminal cancer. One of them was in Sloan Kettering. One of them was at the end of her life. You see her looking like a skeleton in a hospital bed today. She's alive and well. She has a story to tell. She has protocols that combine both orthodox and alternative. He doesn't know about it. Possibly you don't know about it. It's there to help people. This year, there'll be approximately 420,000 to 440,000 Americans who will die who only use orthodox therapy. Everything they were told to do, they did, and they did it obediently. They didn't take a vitamin or a juice or change their diet. They didn't meditate or exercise. They did nothing that the alternative field would suggest. They only did what their oncologist or primary care physicians told them to do, and they died. That's a massive failure. That's massive. That's the type of failure that you would have seen at Gallipoli, or you would have seen at the Charge of the Light Brigade, where 500 died in one of the most foolish, arrogant funnel charges in war history. And we do it every year in the war on cancer. Our war on cancer has become a medical Vietnam, and yet the people in it are so ingrained by their cookbook medicine and their incestuous relationships with the chemotherapy company and drugs that they're afraid to look out of the box. So I would like to see one of these people who have a high profile actually look out of the box, engage the therapy, and benefit. The irony of it is that I've actually counseled someone very, very close to Michael Douglas. But it's not an avenue that could be used at this time. In any case, here's another thought on pancreatic cancer. And this could help save some lives. This is empowering information from Mike Adams, the health ranger. There's some new research. I just read it myself. In Nature magazines, it shows that pancreatic cancer takes about 20 years, minimally, to grow to the point where it is diagnosed by conventional medicine. Now, this was determined by sequencing the DNA of cancer tumor cells from deceased patients. And because cancer mutations occur in growing tumors at a known rate, scientists were able to map the timing of how long it takes to go from, let's say, a defective gene to a full tumor. Here's what the scientist at Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine and Howard Hughes Medical Institute found. And here's why it's so important to this audience. It takes 11.7 years for one mutation in a pancreas cell to grow into a mature pancreatic tumor, which might show up on a medical scan. That's 11.7 years. Do you remember when I said that the doctors got it all wrong? This, by the way, was 1 year before anything was wrong with Bill Clinton. And it was a comment on someone on the show about, well, the American diet couldn't be that bad because look at Bill Clinton, president of the United States, and he gets the best doctors in America at the best medical institutes, given like all presidents and foreign presidents have after medical evaluation every year. And I said, no, they got it all wrong. Even with the so-called best doctors, and I don't question their integrity or their knowledge, or the best medical centers, the same, but I question what they're not looking at. The fact that a man was eating cheeseburgers, smoked cigars, drank alcohol, was highly stressed, didn't exercise, was overweight, would have told me that he was processing multiple diseases, not the least of which was Alzheimer's and possibly dementia, along with congestive heart failure or coronary heart disease. Sure enough, 1 year later, and only a few weeks after he had been given a clean bill of health by his doctors, he was rushed to a hospital for triple bypass surgery. I still believe that in the next 5 years that you will see Bill Clinton, and I hope I'm wrong, because I don't want to see anything bad happen to the man. I can be against his politics. I have nothing against him. But I believe that Bill Clinton will be suffering Alzheimer's and will go the same route as Ronald Reagan or Charlton Heston, because his doctors, once again, missed it. Anything that causes inflammation in one part of the body, every 6.5 minutes, that bloodstream will carry that same inflammatory agent, whether it's a free radical or cytokine or tumor necrosis factor alpha, to every area of the body. It's only where your body is most vulnerable. It's only where you're going to manifest that you'll end up having the symptoms. But the fact that you have a symptom in one area of the body does not mean that you are limited to that area for a problem. The whole body is systemically inflamed. That means the vision and the eyes. It means the brain and the heart, etc. So anyhow, knowing that it takes 11.7 years just to go to that level, then the question is, gee whiz, what could we do in that 11 years to prevent that tumor, to reverse tumors? Now, we're all growing tumors all the time. The question is, when I know I'm growing tumors every day from just being in a polluted environment, from the normal stresses of life, from the normal aging process, why do you think I want you taking your antioxidants? That's one of the most important things you can do each day to trap the free radicals that lead to the destruction of the cell, that leads to the damaged DNA. Also, all the pro-inflammatory agents that are beyond free radicals. These are real heavy-duty attackers to the cell. That's why I want you taking your green powders and your red powders, because they flood the body with phytonutrients that actually stop the free radicals and pro-inflammatory agents and then actually repair the DNA. So we're way ahead of orthodox medicine. I mean, we're 20 years ahead of orthodox medicine. We're doing more than any of the best and brightest at any of these universities. And if you doubt me, you know what I'll do? I'm going to ask Matt, my engineer, to tell Richard Polonesky up in production to see if he can locate my lectures at the last 6 scientific conferences I was a keynote speaker at before thousands upon thousands of scientists from the best institutes. None of what I was dealing with had they dealt with. None of the reversals, the cures, none of the DNA repair all over the body. And even right now, if you look, if you're watching, 4 weeks ago I got a crew cut. I mean, I got a buzz cut. On top of my head, it was down to a quarter inch in the back. And even more, they shaved part of the back of my head because they wanted to get a measurement of zero, meaning no hair growth at all, and then measure it based upon zero hair growth. Fortunately, it didn't take a whole lot for it to look strange, but it was about 7 inches long and about a quarter inch wide, and it's already grown almost a half inch. But for the rest of my hair, there was no hair on my head except for the front that was only an inch. Now, I'm going to let you watch over the next 11 months based upon a new protocol that no one has yet. I'm using myself as a model. Seeing where I'm at now, in the next 11 months, I predict I will grow 7 inches of hair. I know of no one who's ever grown 7 inches of hair in a year. Let's see if I can do it. And you'll see for yourself. And at the same time, my skin, and I'm here with bright lights, 400 watts of light, no makeup, bright, clear up, high definition. You'll see how much clear and smooth the skin is. And my skin's like I was when I was 18 years old. First, I'll use myself as a model. Then I'll do a study. And I'll use 1,000 people in the study. And then we'll see the results, and if the results are positive, it'll open up a whole new paradigm in science, a functional healing. And I'm calling this a functional healing with energy, meaning I'm looking at the energy value of different foods and all. I'm doing all new research. I'm setting up a whole new laboratory to measure the food variants, energy factors, meaning how much energy does a vitamin have, how much healing energy does a food have. Now, the average person will say, well, there's nothing there. And I'll say, yes, we're measuring actual energy. There's scientific instruments can measure the energy. And based upon the energy, it's the energy that you transfer into the body and the energy that you exchange in the process that makes a difference. That's hard for most people to understand. I don't want to get into it now because it's just too esoteric for most people. But I'll just give you a little tidbit, and I'll go into great depth. I'm going to use the whole principle of my 30-day work in January with these people who don't have reversible conditions to apply that, and I'm going to actually film it, and I'm going to do the scientific research at the same time so they can actually see it, that if you just put energy in to a person, into their mind, into their chakras, into their skin, into their bloodstream, that's good. But if you haven't reverse the energy that's there, if you haven't actually done an energy exchange, in other words, letting energy in you, psychic energy, emotional energy, historical traumas, if you have not surrendered that energy and allowed that exchange to occur through a transfer of epigenetics. This even goes beyond Bruce Lipton. In fact, I'm going to be filming Bruce again. I just did 7 films with Bruce. That you'll all be seeing. I filmed him in Australia recently, or New Zealand recently. But now I've taken epigenetics to a new level, exchanging epigenetics. They hadn't even gotten there yet, and we're already past that. So, sounds a little crazy, doesn't it? Until one day, you see Marie McGovern, you see someone, you think, well, how in the hell did that happen? It's all about the exchange of energy. If I took you from a really ugly, bad environment, and if I put you in a beautiful environment, that's an exchange of energy. Only if you cannot just be physically in a new environment, but psychologically in a new environment, emotionally in a new environment, spiritually in a new environment, creatively in a new environment, optimistically in a new environment, hopefully in a new environment, and then have the discipline to keep your focus on where you're at instead of reverting back to where you were. Hence, you have good people doing bad things, smart people doing stupid things, hopeful people doing self-sabotaging things. I don't want to go any more into it. I have to take it deeper, and I can't at this moment because it's going to mess up the flow of the show. Anyhow, the whole idea is, and you'll see this evolving, because if you see today, and you see what I look like today, no makeup, not a wrinkle, skin of an 18-year-old, look at my hair, see where it's at now, you know, see the left, the right, the front, the top. All right, the back is a crew cut. My nails, look at those hands. Look at the fingernails. All right, pink, hard, smooth as silk. All right, a musculature. Just got my impedance done with a whole group of people in the New Health Support Group looking on because I had them get it. And they said, oh, get your impedance done, Gary. I said, well, I'm not in the study. Well, we want to see. So I took my shoes off, got on the scale. 191 pounds, the heaviest I've been in 22 years because I'm not racing. I'm taking 2 months off from racing. I'll get back into racing because the racing season ended. I did 15 races, won, set 6 state records, and won 15 golds. So this year, next year is the World Games. So I got 4 months of training for the World Games, and that's heavy-duty training. I'm going to go way down in weight for that. But in any case, I was 1.7% body fat. That's 1.7%. It means all muscle. So I'm not saying you should do that. So I know where I'm starting this journey. So you can watch it as I do it. And then if it works for me, imagine what it will do. Because what I'm doing to rejuvenate this is also repairing the cells inside of my body. Rejuvenating the brain cells. Rejuvenating the heart cells. Rejuvenating the biochemistry. So what I'm saying is don't look at just changing one part of what's wrong. Change everything. Because you can change everything. Not just do it piecemeal. So let's go back to this. So now it's 11.7 years for one mutation in a pancreas cell to grow to a mature cancer tumor. It takes 6.8 years for the pancreatic tumor to spread and cause tumors to appear in other organs of the body. And all it takes 20 years for a person to grow a cancer tumor and for it to spread. So the good news is by the time doctors diagnose you with cancer, you already have been growing it for 2 decades. That means that the idea thrown around by cancer doctors that cancer is a spontaneous disease is a lie. It does not strike randomly and without warning. That's pure nonsense. In order to get cancer, you actually have to grow cancer for 20 years. It doesn't appear just like magic. When your doctors diagnose you with pancreatic cancer and say, good thing we caught it early, say, sorry, doc, you're 20 years too late. If it takes 20 years to grow a tumor, you have 20 years of lifestyle to stop it, to reverse it. Flood your body with phytonutrients and green juices and red juices. Flood your body with healing vegetables and fruits and grains and legumes. Take your vitamin D every day because it's one of the single most important nutrients. Because vitamin D halts 77% of all cancers. Did you hear what I just said? Let me say that again. Vitamin D halts 77% of all cancers. That's correct. Including pancreatic cancer. And when combined with other nutrients like selenium and vitamin C, it can halt even more. So if you combine vitamin D and selenium with other anti-cancer nutrients, like the omega-3 fatty acids and your berries in particular, and resveratrol, then imagine the internal biological environment that you are creating. Cancer tumors simply cannot grow in an environment that's rich in plant-based nutrients and healthy and happy. And let us not forget, happy. You can take all the nutrients in the world, and that's important, but if you're not happy, that's the negative energy you've got to surrender. Remember, everything has to have two phases. Surrender and exchange the negative as you bring in the positive. If you bring in the positive and don't surrender the negative, well, join the Deepak generation, or the Andrew Weil generation, or the Tony Robbins generation, or the other skatey ape people out there who tell you the good news, never tell you the bad news because they don't want to make you feel bad. Well, then they only give you a half-truth. There's an old Jewish saying, a half-truth is a full lie. You need to know the truth of everything, whether you like it or not, whether you can face it or not, because it's only when you can open up all those doors and allow that negative energy to be surrendered and then replace with positive energy and cycle positive from negative, then you're on a roll. Stay away from all those artificial chemicals, because those chemicals also contribute to cancer. One more study here before we take our break. High blood pressure is on the rise among young people. This is one of the latest reports that I have seen on this from the American Heart Association. Says rates of high blood pressure have remained steady for about 10 years, except in one category, young adults 18 to 39, increasing in blood pressure. Why? Stress? Lack of exercise? Adulterated diets? Not taking their supplements? I've been writing a new chapter in my new book, and I'm on the section of the book called Generation Sub-Zero. Oh, it'll make people angry. But try to find anything in that chapter that's not true. It's one of those things, hearing what we don't want to hear because it makes us angry. More on that coming up. I just want to let people know there are positive ways of dealing with high blood pressure. First, get off all junk food. Second, give up all sugars and dietary sodas. Third, give up all your caffeine. Fourth, start to exercise 1 hour a day. Fifth, though it will feel like someone is pulling your fingernails out, turn off your computer except for 1 hour a day, and no going to Facebook or Twittering except for 1 hour a day. Stay off your cell phone except for 10 minutes a day. And then apply that time to de-stressing or constructive input. I'm Gary Knoll. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Many a tear have to fall. For all of you who appreciate people who actually had voices when they sang. In about 10 minutes from now, we'll be talking with Professor Ellen Hodgkins Brown about the fraud of foreclosure gate and how we have become so indebted and how to get out of it. Cara Lee's in studio. Before we go to Cara Lee, just a couple of thoughts for those who are listening to what I consider very irresponsible rants within the media against the Tea Party people. Clearly, there are people within the Tea Party who are not independent-minded, who have allowed themselves to be used by the Koch brothers and others who are rich and powerful to become environmental global warming deniers, who have aligned themselves with the Ken Bucks of Colorado or Christine O'Donnell in Delaware or Joe Miller in Alaska or Sharon Angle in Nevada or Ron Johnson in Wisconsin. And it was rather surprising. I'm sure many of you heard about it if you didn't see it, when O'Donnell was talking about her concerns. I didn't hear any of the Tea Party candidates talk about what really matters. Now, there's two ways of looking at the Constitution. I'm a constitutionalist. I'm a person who is an independent, progressive constitutionalist. And almost everyone talking about, like Glenn Beck talking about the Constitution, are talking about a Constitution that doesn't exist. I'm talking about Thomas Jefferson Constitution, not the Republican made-up Constitution. For example, in our Constitution, we are against preemptive war, and yet I haven't heard the Tea Party candidates, nor have I even heard the Democrats, say the war in Iraq is wrong, it was not a war of truth, it was not a war for liberty or justice or freedom, it was a war based upon neoconservative economic geopolitical values. The gas line that would have gone through that area, the oil from Iraq, the same is true for Afghanistan. The same has been true for Pakistan, spending hundreds of billions, actually $1 trillion, only for the profit of the corporate contractors like Halliburton and Bechtel and others that exploited us. I haven't heard any of the Tea Party candidates railing against the war and demanding a scalp. I also have not heard them talking about what we should be doing in this country, and that is reversing the Patriot Act. If you're a constitutionalist, then we should have rights of habeas corpus. Where is Keith Olbermann? Where is Rachel Maddow? Where's the entire left? You should have already organized protest in front of the White House and Congress demanding the repeal of the Patriot Act, the Homeland Security Act, because we do not have an amendment now that protects us against habeas corpus. Also, rendition of taking prisoners and putting them in places against treaties. Remember, when we sign a treaty, it becomes the law of our land. So when we sign the Geneva Convention, that's a treaty. That means we cannot engage in the construction of biological weapons. We did so in violation of that. Why should we be allowed to contravene all these international treaties? Well, if they were real constitutionalists, they would be abhorred by that. So we have undeclared wars that are illegal. We have taken away the rights of habeas corpus. And I do not see people resisting that. And where are we then representing the interests of American workers and the interests of American farmers and the interests of American communities? Russ Feingold is doing that, but now the Tea Party people are. So before you call yourself a populist and before you say you're railing against government excesses, are you railing against the excess of over $2 trillion a year given to special interest groups, the farm cartels, the energy cartels, the military-industrial complex cartels, the big pharma cartels, the insurance cartels? These are the people receiving money, yet the average person doesn't get a break. The average farmer, the average citizen doesn't get a break. So I think that they have been extremely misguided. You don't want to follow the Constitution that we should be following. You want a rewritten and reinterpreted Constitution. I don't hear you railing against the Supreme Court. I don't hear you railing against the most corrupt Supreme Court in American history. Now, you call yourself radical, but you're not radical. You didn't challenge Chief Justice John Roberts and his conservative majority, who've reinterpreted the First Amendment free speech protection in a manner that extends the natural rights that the founders reserved for human beings only. Could you imagine what Thomas Jefferson and Benjamin Franklin and George Washington would think today if you told them, we're going to allow a multinational corporation, we're going to allow a country, China, to spend $100 billion in our next presidential election to elect who they, the Chinese, want as a president? What do you think they would say? But I haven't heard you railing against. I haven't seen Glenn Beck take his millions of people or Sean Hannity to the Supreme Court and rail against it. Why? Because they are so pro-corporations. But they're confused. Glenn's confused about a lot of stuff, whether to laugh or cry, for example. He seems roiled in irony. Glenn, let me explain something to you. I'm a small business person. I believe in the power of the small business person and getting government off our backs. But I also want to make sure that in the process of giving us a chance to do our business and to employ people at a living wage and to have some safety that we will be able to continue to do that, that we don't also take away the important supervision of the security of an airline, the safety of appliances, the safety of cars, the safety of a ship. I don't want to be on a ship and it breaks down because somehow the rules that are applying for safety were wiped away by deregulation. Look what happened with the deregulation of Wall Street with the Glass-Steagall Act. Look at the mess we're in. That's because of Bill Clinton was the number one cause of our current crisis. And by the way, that was also stated yesterday on camera in my new film by Mr. Scheer. Now, So you have to be very careful. The pro-business community means small mom-and-pop businesses, not corporate America. Corporate America is not small business. We make our income by supplying product and services to Americans locally. Major corporations offshore those jobs and make money off money. I don't see you protesting that. Also, be very clear. Miss O'Donnell, I will not challenge your integrity, but I will challenge your competency. You actually seem startled by the First Amendment concerning religious freedom. You stated, quote, where in the Constitution is the separation of church and state? And you want to be a senator? My goodness. This is appalling. Just for the record, here's what the First Amendment actually says, Miss O'Donnell. Quote, Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof or abridging the freedom of speech or the press or the right of the people peacefully to assemble and to petition the government for redress of grievances. So you have something that should no longer be the issue. So what about all you Republicans? What about all you conservatives who believe in the Constitution? No, you're hypocrites. Because when George Bush was in office, you allowed religious initiatives to be a major funded, public funded issue with hundreds of millions of dollars going to religious organizations to bring them in so they could mold and shape the laws of our land. And yet the Constitution specifically prohibits that. And it's actually being even more aggressively pursued under Obama. We should have no one having any say-so about any religion at any time under any circumstance involving our rights and freedoms. Your religion is your business, and you have a right to that, as I do mine. But that's not how the Constitution is being interpreted today. If you do not agree with all the conservative values and social values, you're somehow considered unconstitutional and unpatriotic. To the contrary, those of us who believe in the Constitution and true values understand we must keep the two separate, and that has been completely commingled and co-opted from Pat Robertson and the moral majority up to the current standing. And finally, let us be clear on something. That when the founders put it in, there was no mystery about original intent with regard to the wall between church and state. Only in the late 1820s did a group of Christians raise Cain about this, and they complained, and this was rejected by Congress. In fact, they stated, Kentucky Senator Richard Johnson, to quote, our government is a civil and not a religious institution. Remember the Magna Carta, which established that the will of the monarch wasn't arbitrary, and therefore, if you were a free man, you were free, and your property was your property, and he could not come in and arbitrarily take it, as they had before the Magna Carta. Quote, no person shall be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. That's the Constitution. That's verbatim in the Constitution. So for those of you who are going to use, like Glenn Beck, the Constitution, my God, Glenn, with all the money you're making each year and all the staff you have, please, sir, spend a few hours of your own undivided time away from a mirror, away from a laugh and cry machine, away from your pundits, and actually read the Constitution and understand it. 1215 A.D., we were given the rights to our land, and today those rights are being taken away. Ignorance of an issue is not the justification to revoke your social obligations to it. I'm Gary Nall, back in a moment. Please stay with us.
They really rock it in Boston and Pittsburgh, PA, deep in the heart of Texas and around the Frisco Bay. Got to have about a half a million. famed autograph.
I'd like to welcome all of you from all over the world. Let's go to my guest now, standing by in Los Angeles, California, Ellen Hodgkins Brown. She's an attorney. She practiced civil litigation before turning her legal skills on investigating and reporting on the powerful private financial cartels in the Federal Reserve who control America's economic system. She wrote a very revealing scholarly book called Web of Debt, The Shocking Truth About Our Money System and How We Can Break Free, where she analyzes Wall Street and its hold on Washington's control of money for their self-interest. She runs a blog, webofdebt.com, which is important. I suggest you take a look at it. Her new book is Forbidden Medicine, which explores the suppression of natural health treatments by the same corrupting powers that now control our money. Nice to have you with us today, Ellen.
Oh, thanks, Gary.
Ellen, I'm going to give you a couple larger issues and just keep quiet and let you run with them, all right?
Mm-hmm.
First up, you and I must follow any contract to the letter. If we don't, it is the fine print that we're held accountable to, no matter what the circumstances. And millions of Americans have found that if they missed a payment, even by an hour, by a day, they were still charged for that. There was no grace. There was no forgiveness. And now we're allowing an entire industry that is at its base based upon greed and frequently corruption to have the ability to rewrite contracts or simply to overlook their own neglect, sometimes with criminal neglect, as if this doesn't matter because the crime is so big and there's so many people and there's so many victims that this our complete litigation in America would be diverted to this. We're talking about millions and millions of individuals could have been adversely affected, with about 6 million more to be adversely affected. And so we simply say, if enough people commit a crime, and if it adversely affects enough people, we will simply say it doesn't matter, like we did the war in Iraq, with all the lies and all of the perjured information, with all the misinformation that has caused so much death and suffering. We will simply say, let's look forward, not backwards, as if that would have been like saying to the Nazis, there were so many of you involved in so many heinous crimes and genocide against Jews and others, we'll look forward. You can all go home and resume your lives. Now that's what we're doing with this this home foreclosure mess. And also, that's one point. The second point is the President of the United States has the power by executive order to bring a temporary foreclosure scandal to a halt. He could stop it, and then with the power of his office and the power of his executive order, allow people opportunities to renegotiate or at least have a better option of staying in their homes. He's chosen not to do that. That is a choice that he's fully aware of, but has chosen not to because he's used those executive orders to help private groups and major industries, but not the average person. It shows us a lot about his character. My next and final area I'd like you to deal with is the Federal Reserve. If you and I spend more money than what we make, we are in debt. If we cannot repay it, we go bankrupt. And we are held accountable for that. Our reputations are affected. The federal government, the Federal Reserve, the Treasury, the major banks have all been completely insolvent. And yet they print more money as if all they have to do is monetize that debt, and the standards we would never accept from any other nation that would cause hyperinflation here does not apply. Why is it we cannot see the Federal Reserve as a completely corrupt organization and vote to have it replaced by a treasury? We didn't start with the Federal Reserve. We've done well without a Federal Reserve. And now I believe the Federal Reserve is causing us, with artificially low interest rates and giving massive money at zero interest to banks, even holding that money in its own bank, the Federal Reserve Bank, and yet paying interest on money that they never paid for to begin with. That, to me, is one of the most heinous crimes against our citizens, where you and I couldn't get a break on a loan, and a small business person can't get a break. Banks are actually given massive amounts of money that they frequently don't even take possession of, and yet that is considered completely normal. Would you address these two areas, please?
Okay, first on Foreclosuregate and the fact that the courts are not holding the banks to the same standard that we're held to. I actually, my first job was clerking for three different judges, my first job as a lawyer, and I was instructed that our job was to find something wrong with these pleadings, that the judge did not want to look at this stuff. He was overwhelmed, and so we were supposed to find some technicality that had been where the plaintiff or defendant had failed to comply with. So we definitely were holding them to the dotting every I and crossing every T. And these big banks, as you say, first of all, there's the robo-signing issue where they are sending these mortgages out to be basically for perjured affidavits saying that the properties were purchased or that they were conveyed to these trustees in order for the trustees to foreclose. So there's fraud right there in the paperwork. But you could say that was just, they're arguing, well, it was just sloppiness. They were in such a hurry that they didn't do the paperwork right. But in fact, that's not what they were covering up. They were covering up the fact that they were breaking the law. And I think that that's what we have to expose here, is that there was actual crime going on behind this curtain, called the Mortgage Electronic Registration Systems. What the banks did was that the idea was to securitize all their loans. So the banks had been limited in the amount of loans they could make by the capital requirement, the reserve requirement. So with the capital requirement that came in 1988, it was 8%. You had to have 8% capital for... If you had $8 of capital, you could make $100 in loans. That was the 8% requirement. So once you had your $100 in loans out there, you couldn't make any more loans. You had to wait until that loan was paid off. But first of all, there was a huge demand for credit. And second of all, the banks couldn't make any money that way. They make their money by creating credit on their books. Basically, it's a fraud, but that's where the demand is. That's what banks do. They create credit. And they weren't able to do that. So they went around that system by setting up what was called the shadow banking system, where they sold the loans off to investors. And then they could make more. Their same $8 of capital would support another $100 in loans and then another $100 if they sold them off to investors. And the investors, for their part, the reason they wanted these loans, these were largely the large institutional investors that had much more than $250,000 to park in between their investments. It would be like the pension funds, the hedge funds, sovereign wealth funds, mutual funds, all those big conglomerates of money that are always shifting around. So they wanted something that was as liquid as a bank. They wanted to be able to pull their money out in a day, but they didn't want to put the money in the bank because if the bank went bankrupt, then they weren't covered by FDIC insurance, which only went to $250,000. So they would put their money in this what was called the shadow banking system, which is basically the repo market, the purchase and the sale and repurchase of real estate. So what backed their giving their money up, they would give their money up to this special purpose vehicle that was set up by the bank, and in return they would get these mortgage-backed securities. So basically it was a pawn shop where they're giving the money and the pawn shop is giving them the mortgage-backed securities to hold as security. So MERS was set up, this Mortgage Electronic Registration Systems, in order that all these buyers and buying and selling of real estate didn't have to be recorded, because under state law, you have to, every time property changes hands, in order to establish title to it, you need to be able to show the chain of title. You don't absolutely have to go to the recording office to record it, but at least you have to have the piece of paper with one signature after another on it showing the chain of title from the original promise, the original buyer and lender, down to the party that's trying to foreclose. So the banks thought they could get away with putting all this paper in the name of MERS, and then MERS would convey it, originally MERS itself was foreclosing. And then a number of courts noticed, because the defendant's counsel kept pointing it out, that MERS could not hold tidal. It was an empty conduit. It had to be an empty conduit to satisfy the investor, the requirements for these investor pools, and to satisfy the tax laws, because they were avoiding taxes with their conduit. So if it could not hold title, then it could not convey title to, well, first of all, it couldn't foreclose itself because it didn't have title or couldn't show the chain of title, and it couldn't convey title to the trustees. So originally, the banks were just coming up with paperwork showing that the trustees had gotten title from MERS, but then the courts were saying, no, if you got MERS on your title there, that's broken the chain of title, and there's no way that you can get from the original lender to the trustee of these REMICs. This would be the investor groups, the real estate mortgage investment conduits, which, again, are just conduits. They can't own anything.
Could you come to the conclusion of what this represents?
Okay. So that whole thing was set up in order to set up the shadow banking system that would avoid capital requirements, avoid reserve requirements. But you see what's happened, is that capital and reserve requirements were protecting the system and protecting the investors. So it turns out the investors don't have anything backing their securities. And that's this whole mess that we have right now going on with the banks. They were trying to step outside of being tied down to lending only the money they had. They wanted to be able to create credit. So I just wrote an article on that is the inherent flaw in our system, is that we think
But that's
money,
that's a Ponzi scheme.
Yeah, it is. That's the thing. They need to do the Ponzi scheme in order to create credit, and the people want the credit. There's a demand for credit, and the banks want to do it because that's where they make their money. So the inherent flaw is that they're private. You could have a credit system that did create credit that would be honest, forthright, above board, if it were a public entity. So that's, you know, my particular solution would be that we need to put those big banks into receivership, because they'll wind up in receivership anyway. A number of experts have said that. William Black and Professor Randall Ray recently wrote an article on that there's no way there. J.P. Morgan has $98 trillion in derivatives. There is no way that they are going to ultimately avoid having to go through
foreclosure themselves. I would offer a different opinion, Ellen. Here's mine. Based on the Republicans controlling the House coming up and being deadlocked in the Senate with only possibly two seats separating them, that means that there'll be 2 years of nothing. Both the Democrats, especially the Blue Dog Democrats and the Conservative Democrats, as well as almost all the Republicans, with the only exception of two, will vote as a group not to see that any of these too big to fail banks fail. They will continue to do bailouts of these banks. We, the American public, will take greedy banks that have done nothing to help us as a country. We will bail them out, and then we will be on the hook, and they still will not have to divulge their credit default swap positions or derivative positions, as they don't now. There is no public record in existence that shows what the actual off-book positions are of all of these institutions. And that, to me, is a national disgrace and tells us a lot about our Congress, the White House, and our Treasury Department. We're going to say goodbye to our WMYE audience. My guest is Ellen Brown. You can continue to watch and listen by going to GaryNall.com or ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com. Now, the second part of my issue is this. When I was studying the economies, plural, I said, why in the world are all these talking heads and these supposedly knowledgeable economists, none of whom saw the crisis coming? By the way, we were talking about this crisis and the meltdown a full 1 year before it happened, in not vague terms, very specific terms. 1 year before any economic crisis, I said to my audience, get out of the housing area because we're in a massively overexpanded bubble and some real estate is going 800% over its initial price. And I said, I know friends. I did whole discussions about how a whole 45 major new buildings were being built in Miami Beach On the side that faces the Atlantic Ocean, there's a four-mile waterway, a bay separating Miami Beach from South Beach. And I said, those are all speculative. Everyone I know is buying speculative apartments to flip them. And I said, don't do it, because by the time these buildings are built, I predict that the economy will have melted down because every bubble deflates. That was a year before this. I also said we have a credit card bubble, a hedge fund bubble, an equity partnership bubble, and a commercial real estate bubble. Now, here are all these experts. They're all saying the economy. I'm saying, excuse me, do you mean the economy as in the Wall Street economy that is disconnected from the small businesses of America, that is disconnected from the manufacturing base of America, that is making money off money by exotic derivatives and credit default swaps and gambles and manipulation of commodities and currencies like oil, food, water? Is that what you're talking about? Because if that's the case, then I say let every one of these banks, including Goldman Sachs, let them fail by going through bankruptcy, firing those people responsible, reorganizing the banks, getting rid of all the debt, including once and for all getting rid of all the derivative and credit default swap positions. And everyone says, no, 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 you can't do that. The entire world would collapse. And I say, no, it wouldn't. Wouldn't affect me at all. Wouldn't affect most people. But it will affect the people who are holding the bets. And to this day, we're still with that same mindset that we only think of America as having one economy. We actually have eight different economies. Why is it the economists in America are refusing to look at the truth that we are not all beholden to Wall Street? Let these bastards drop. Those are my thoughts. I'd like yours.
Well, I totally agree with that. And Professors Black and Ray said that what you could do is put the big banks into a bank holiday and put them all into a room together. So they all shut down for a while. Put them all into a room together. They hold all the derivatives. So let them net those derivatives out among themselves. They're just bets. I mean, the reason we had to bail out AIG was that it had all these counterparties to bets that were not in receivership or that were not bankrupt. Or actually, they were. Goldman Sachs was bankrupt, but we bailed it out. Had we not bailed it out, but we had put Goldman Sachs and AIG into a room and say, you guys work this out, then they could have zeroed those bets out, and it wouldn't hurt anybody but their stockholders. And the stockholders, that's the risk you take when you invest in any kind of company. The company can go bankrupt. That's part of the capitalist system. Everybody that's smaller than a too-big-to-fail takes that risk, and the too-big-to-fails should too. So I totally agree, but I'm afraid what's happening, like you say, is the other way, that we're going to continue to guarantee these great monsters. I saw that Bank of America is now underwriting title insurance. So that means we, the people, are underwriting title insurance for all these deals that are going to go bad. I mean, all this lawsuit, all this litigation that's going to go on, we will be underwriting it because we underwrite the FDIC, which guarantees the deposits in Bank of America and other banks. And now that Bank of America is doing it, everybody else is, all the other title insurers are going to want to be underwritten as well. So basically, we're going to have a deal where we, the people, the taxpayers, are underwriting their losses, but they will still get the gains. So if indeed it's decided that we have to underwrite their losses, we should have the whole deal. Not only is that better for us because we'll get the profits, but that allows us to net the whole thing out. Like you said, you can put the homeowners, give them a little space, and everybody can work this all out. Now the homeowners have some clout. They can say, you don't have title at all. We don't need to pay anything, really. You can't prove that you are the party that we owe money to. But because we acknowledge, you know, inequity, we owe money to somebody, we'll work it out. We'll do something fair. The homeowners have never had the kind of leverage that they have right now, particularly if they were to organize. It seems to me the homeowners should have a big lobby that would go in and stand up to the banks, because that's all that Congress listens to, is money power.
Then why don't we do this? We're out of time for this hour. I'm going to invite you back to talk about the Federal Reserve. But why don't you get some other attorneys and start to bring a class action lawsuit against these people on behalf of all those people who were illegally foreclosed on? I would see massive class actions here. Do not let this administration or its supporters on both the right and left, and unfortunately even these misguided Tea Party individuals, will say, we're against big government, and they'll go right into the hands of big corporations. Boy, if that isn't lunatic. And yeah. We're against big government. Are you against the biggest two parts of the government, the military-industrial complex? Danny Schechter has just entered the studio. He shows follow this. Hi, Danny.
Hi there, Gary, and hi, Ellen.
Hi, Danny.
Ellen Brown is the one-person band of renown when it comes to discussing debt. And, you know, I tried to invite her on my show today. She said, no, I'm doing Gary Noel at 12:30. You beat me to the punch, Gary. It's so great to have her on the Progressive Radio Network because we know how smart she is and how important her work is.
Well, how about this, Danny? I don't know what you have lined up. Would you like to continue for a few minutes with Ellen?
I could do it. Greg Palast is joining me, but yes, we could.
Oh, Greg's a great guy. Okay, Greg, I just heard from the engineer. He'll call you back. So let's do this. I'm going to say goodbye to my section of the program with Ellen Brown. Ellen, I'm going to have you back next week if you have time to talk specifically about the Federal Reserve and what the Federal Reserve is doing in monetizing debt, controlling the interest rates, loaning money at zero to major banks, then holding $1.3 trillion in the money that they have created out of thin air, and then giving interest on that money that we, the taxpayer, pay. And then they make a profit, and they share that with their banks. All of this is outside of the purview of the average person, and let's talk about it, all right?
Okay, sounds great.
Now, everyone, we're going to take a brief music break for a moment, and we'll continue with Ellen Brown on the Danny Schechter Show right here.
Hey, you. Thank you, Gary.
Come out here on the floor. Let's rock some more.
The Gary Noel Show is produced in our New York City studios. The producer is Richard Gale. The engineer is Matt Bogart. All shows are archived by Joe Kemp. Our chief archivist is Sharon Pride, and the program director is Carol Lee.
Put your hands on your hip and let your backbone slip and work out. Ah, my mama moved up. First,